Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Warriors, come out to play!
I want the rest of you cowboys to know something. There's a new sheriff in town.
I'll try it again, punk.
Well, you or me, Montana.
My money'd be on you.
That audio logo means it's time for another edition of Walter on Walter with Walter Chow. Chow is a film critic and the author of a Walter Hill film. Today, we're discussing the 1982 trailblazing film, 48 Hours. Starring Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte, the film is thought by many to have popularized the buddy cop genre. But Chow says that there's more to the movie than that. He says that it has a lot of hallmarks of Walter Hill's films. 48 Hours looks at the destructive nature of toxic masculinity and the ugly truths about racism in America. Chow said that 48 Hours resonated with him deeply because he not only saw it while he was very young, but that the film opened a doorway to dealing with the racism he himself faced.
I was terrified of it in a lot of ways because I knew that it was forbidden. You know, we as was sort of the ritual, I don't know if you were engaged in this sort of low-level criminality, but we would always buy tickets for PG-rated movies, whatever the Disney re-release was or whatever. We would buy those tickets because we were allowed to, and then we would sneak into the R-rated theaters. Mm. And it was already terrifying because when you're a kid, you think there are actually consequences. You don't realize that the people working in theaters are often, you know, just teenagers who are sick of you and don't really want to deal with you anyway. They wouldn't care if you went in there. So it already had the element of the illicit as we were going in, my buddy and I. And watching it, I think I knew I was watching something I shouldn't know, but I was also confronted with this possibility. It was like a portal that there was a whole world of movies out there that I was maybe not allowed to see, but look at how amazing they are. Look at the gunfire and the beautiful women and the tough men. I was particularly drawn to the Eddie Murphy character in 48 Hours for, you know, maybe not obvious reasons. He's obviously the energy, the lifeblood of that film. But there's something about Eddie Murphy and the way that he handles the racism that really spoke to me even as a 9-year-old, although I wouldn't be able to articulate it and maybe still are not able to articulate it as well as I'd like to. But there's something about how he is not surprised, I guess, by the racism and has instead learned to use the way that other people see him against the people that choose to only see him in that way.
I'd like something to drink, preferably some vodka. Maybe best have a Black Russian. Black Russian. You wouldn't say Black Russian, that's a funny joke, I get it. I'm black. That's funny. No, I'd just rather have plain old vodka, that'd be nice.
People are constantly surprised by Reggie Hammond throughout the course of 48 hours. And that's because they don't see him as smart. They don't see him as able. They don't. They judge him instantly based on what he looks like and what he sounds like and how he chooses to act. And it's to their own detriment. It's sort of the cloak that he uses to be powerful. And I never thought of my race. I'm Asian American. My parents were Chinese. I was born in Colorado. I never thought of my race as an advantage until I saw 48 Hours. And so in more than just the illicit sense, it was a watershed for me to see that film at 9 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine it would be. Yeah. How did 48 Hours end up becoming what you've described as this edgy, even dangerous conversation about race and identity in America?
Well, I think that has a lot to do with Walter Hill. And he would balk, I'm sure, at the idea that he's progressive in some way, not because he's not or he doesn't agree with progressive principles, but just because I don't think he thinks of himself that way. I think what you get in Walter Hill's films is a guy who's very open-eyed, very clear-eyed about the way that the world is. And so that he looks at a police station and he sees diversity. Of course, there's a lot of diversity, but as we've learned in the worst possible ways, even recently, it doesn't really matter what color your skin is. When you become a cop, you become part of a system that's perhaps biased. And so you become the upholder of a biased system, no matter what your background is. And Hill understood that all the way back in 1982. He said, hey, funny thing, when this police captain, played by Frank McRae, when the police captain's black, he's still racist against African Americans somehow. And this is a thing that, you know, that conversation is a conversation that we are still having in the United States. We're still having this conversation. How could this be? How could it happen this way? How could this be corrupt this way? A few bad apples. And no one ever completes the few bad apples aphorism, which is spoils the entire batch. But he gets it. And not in a way that's judgmental, not in a way that you ever feel like you're being preached to, but in a way that's just very open-eyed about it and says, this is just the way it is. This is the way the men talk to each other.
Me and some of my friends hit a dealer during a sale. It's the kind of money nobody reports stolen. One of the guys turned around and dropped a dime on me. Happens to be the same guy that's running around shooting people with a certain cop's gun.
So he's after your money.
You know, you're a real bright cop. You know that, Jack? So how much you want, man, huh? Huh? What, you want to split 50-50?
Not likely, convict.
Oh, I can't have nothing now, right?
I believe in the merit system. So far, you ain't built up no points, boy.
Oh, well, then I'll be real good from now on, Mr. Cates.
Just tell me where the goddamn money is.
The use of racial invective in 48 Hours and many of his other films during this period is extraordinary because it's not only the way that these men are needling each other, starting fights with each other, but it's also the way that they're becoming friends. You know, my best friends in the world, I say the worst things you can think of to my best friends that I've had since first grade. I call them names I used to call them. I make fun of that time in second grade that he threw up. You know, these things are part of the way that we make friends as men and also part of the way that we fight as men. It's all part of this thesis, I think, that Hill has, that men are essentially violent. Men are essentially born of this place of conflict. And men are only taught in our society to express themselves in certain ways. It's not okay for guys to cry in our society or hold hands or hug or give each other kisses on the cheek. We're not allowed to do that. We are allowed to be angry, to be rageful, to swing, to have a good right hook. And so, you know, in 48 Hours, there's even this expression of respect between the two of these guys, Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy, Jack and Reggie. They express their love for each other ultimately through this big fight in the middle of the street. And even at the end of the fight that Reggie was about to win, Jack says, you know what, when I write up the report, I'm going to say that I won.
That's what you tell him down at the station house tonight.
Yeah, right. I even put it in my report that way.
Yeah, I bet you will.
Because he's reasserting his power institutionally over Reggie, over his black friend, if you want to call him that, convict. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's not really, 48 Hours is not about it. It's not. It's been called the prototypical buddy comedy, but it's neither the first nor is it about friends. They're not friends at the end of this movie. They're, if anything, kind of co-conspirators. They're still on the opposite sides, and they always will be. There always will be. And there's no real bridging of that racial gap.
Now, Jack,
now the both of us know I'm going to be an honest man from now on, right?
Good.
But if I did decide to be a thief, what makes you think you can catch me?
Can I have my lighter back, Reggie?
That's the tragedy of it, I think. And that's the tragedy of a lot of Walter Hill's movies, is that at the end of the day, you know, Moses doesn't get to go to Canaan. Ethan Edwards doesn't get to come in with the rest of his family and the searchers. At the end of the day, the very qualities that allow these violent men to create society, just like Seth Bullock and Deadwood, the pilot of which Walter Hill also directed, the very qualities that allow men to make society do not make men good for society. You know, all of these violent heroes that create the world have to leave at the end of it. And I say create the world, but it's not a great world. It's not praiseworthy. I'm just saying the world that we have has been created by violent men who are then sort of dismissed for being violent. And that's the irony and the tragedy of being a man, I think.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. I find that interesting that you said just a minute or so ago that men are allowed to be angry. And I wonder, well, is that something, it makes me wonder with all the toxic masculinity we see, is that something that shouldn't be allowed? Like, would we be better off if men weren't allowed to be angry?
Well, you know, I think anger is part of a great stew, right? I mean, it's, mm-hmm. it's, you know, you can't have a stew that's only made of carrot. You know, that's just carrot water. If you want to make if you want to make a stew, you have to have a balance of everything. You can't have one element that overwhelms every other element. And I think if you're making a boy in this culture, and that was a huge question for me when I became a father, is that what do I do? Do I raise my boy the way that I was raised, very closed off emotionally and not able to tell anybody that I love them? And, you know, do I do that or do I do something different? And I lean on, express yourself, cry, it's okay, be frustrated, it's fine, but we need to find different emotions for you to begin to navigate through the world so that you become a good citizen of the world, and you don't sort of mash down any one emotion in favor of any other emotion. I'm not sure anger is a bad thing. You know, I think if anger is the only choice, it's a very bad thing. You know, just like if it was only love, I think that's also a bad thing. And, you know, a lot of our movies make fun of that. So there has to be kind of a balance of like, look, it's okay, man, for you to be angry, but put it aside. And now let's kind of turn on like these different emotions and these different strategies for dealing with the world, which will invariably make you angry and frustrated. That's what the world does. But how do you deal with that? You have to be able to deal with it, I think, in more ways than just anger. And that's what Hill kind of examines, I think, in a lot of his movies. There are very violent men, and the only way that the violent men ever make out is through a violent end. But there are also other men that give you a different kind of example for a possibility of comporting yourself in the world.
Yeah, and let's stay away from the carrot water.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, you describe a key scene in 48 Hours that you say defines the film and defines Eddie Murphy. Can you tell us about this scene?
Well, what made him a star, and the other one I think defines the film, and the scene that made him a star is the scene in Torchy's, the real redneck bar with the Confederate flag and everything, and in the middle of San Francisco, so it's kind of a fancy, but he goes to this redneck bar, and he sort of dresses down everybody in there, and he yells at them, and he calls them all the names that I think every minority group in the country would love to call a bunch of white people, and so it's a huge moment because it's such a unexpected moment, I think, in American film in the 80s. We did a lot of that stuff in the 60s and 70s, but less so in the blockbuster era. And so, you know, that's the moment that Eddie Murphy becomes a star. I think the key moment that defines the film for me anyway is when Jack tries to apologize to Reggie in another bar, in a black bar across the town, and says, you know, hey man, all that stuff that I was calling you, all those invectives, you know, and he names the invectives. I didn't mean those things. I was just trying to keep you down.
I was just doing my job, keeping you down.
Yeah, well, doing your job don't explain everything, Jack.
Yeah, you're right.
And then Reggie doesn't accept his apology, doesn't accept the olive branch. He says instead, yeah, you know, some things you can't just excuse by, you know, you can't excuse that. It's not just doing your job. And Jack agrees, like, yeah, you're right, man. And that for me is like a thunderclap moment in the way that we must and should talk about race in the United States, is to say that, you know, let's begin with this baseline of things are unacceptable. And then we can move forward. But, you know, instead, what we usually do, how we usually argue about these things is say, it doesn't exist, racism, versus it does exist. And we can never get to a place where we can actually begin to solve these problems unless we get to the baseline that 48 Hours represents, which is to say, yeah, some things are just not okay. Some things are, by their nature, inequitable. How do we move forward?
Mm-hmm. And the Torchy sequence almost didn't make it into the final cut of the film. Why?
That's right, because it is such a tightrope. You know, you don't want to fall off on the one side where the audience suddenly realizes that they're the ones being indicted in large part by this. And then you also don't want to fall off into a part where Eddie Murphy is made to look ridiculous. You know, this whole idea that you become left at rather than left with. And so how do you give him this power? It was just a very difficult road, I think, for them to walk on. And so they tested it a couple of times, and one screening audience hated it, and the next screening audience loved it. And at the end of the day, Hill and Larry Gross said, you know what, let's just go for it. And it became such a huge scene, such a huge cultural moment, really, that people, I don't know, completely remember or appreciate, that we knew about that scene before we even saw the movie as third graders. We were talking about, oh, there's this scene in this movie, It's so funny. It's that guy from Saturday Night Live. It's so funny. What is it? It's so funny. Trust me. None of us have seen it. But, you know, we knew about it. It was legend already. And so by the time we did see it, by the time we were watching it in the theaters, people were beginning to laugh as when they saw the Torchy sign, when they knew that the scene was coming up, there was sort of a buildup to it. You could feel it in the theater. And then as the scene was going, people would laugh hard enough. It was like the stories that came out of the early screenings of Some Like It Hot. They were laughing and drowning out a lot of the dialogue. And so people would see it multiple times so that they could get the whole scene.
All right, listen up. I don't like white people. I hate rednecks. You people are rednecks.
It was a huge moment. And so, again, 48 Hours is remembered by people as a comedy, as a knockdown. Oh, man, I love that movie. I remember seeing that movie. It was really hilarious. What they don't remember is all the rest of it, which is not funny, and it's barely funny now. It's really about this tense relationship, this tense racial relationship, this violent crime film. It's a lot of things, but a comedy, it's not. And a movie about friends, it's not. And I think, you know, again, Hill's movies are misremembered in the rearview because they sort of push that pleasure center, and we don't remember exactly all the reasons that we love it. Just that, oh, the shooting was great. That's never the reason that you go to a Walter Hill movie. That's never the reason.
Walter Chow, thanks so much for another fascinating Walter on Walter.
Thank you so much for having me, Doug. It was a real pleasure.
Walter Chow is a film critic and the author of A Walter Hill Film. Find out more about Walter, and 48 Hours at WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Sarah Rosetter, Christine Potter, and Walter Chow.
They have a lot of zany stuff on this program, don't you think?
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Beat Productions.
Fantastic!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
You might be a little more of a team player and a little less of a hot dog on this one.
Our executive producer, nay showrunner, is Adam Friedrich.
I want the rest of you cowboys to know something. There's a new sheriff in town.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I'm going to tell you something about this man. He's got more brains than you ever know.